Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's at ticketking.com.
Check, check. 1, 2. Is this thing on? Yes, it is. Welcome back. It's been a while. Pulse of the Pack is here. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf. Excited to be back after a long layoff. At least it feels like a long layoff for this show. And joined with me, as always, is my delicate and sultry-voiced partner, Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you doing, my friend?
Wow. You always come up with these new ways to introduce me every week, and they're always unique and different. And so it's kind of become like this thing, like, how's he going to do it this week? And I'm never disappointed. I am amazed. God, thank you. I don't know many that would have put it that way, but I'm doing good. It's been an active couple days here. I'm excited to be on the show. We have a special guest. I was thinking about as our intro played, obviously, as you know, now, couple of those sound bites are from previous Packers games, and if you are savvy enough, you know where that first sound bite came from. And so maybe a little bit of a apology to our guest on the show today, as I'm sure listening to that sound bite again is not a top of his list of things to do, but I guess it's a Packers show. It's one of those things you kind of got to deal with, but I'm excited to talk some Packers and NFC North football today. Good to be back in the saddle.
You might apologize. I'm not going to for that. As for my introductions, I guess if you and your wife ever decide to renew your wedding vows and she needs some adjectives, tell her to come my way. I guess I can help a little bit on that in that regard. As we mentioned, this is a Packers show, and the Packers started off free agency by re-signing Nick Perry to a 5-year contract. And normally, in a normal offseason, that is how we would start this show, but this offseason has been anything but normal because the Packers signed former New England Patriots tight end Martellus Bennett, and that nearly caused me to drive off the road as soon as I read that news. Don't tweet and drive, kids, but that's exactly what I was doing when I read that news and nearly crashed several times from excitement, which leads us to the aforementioned guest. That is William Ingles of Windy City Sports. William, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, and I could definitely hear the soundbite from earlier on. There was much gnashing of teeth happening at that time, but I'm glad to be here nonetheless.
Yeah, in case you don't remember, that was the NFC North title game from 2013 where Aaron Rodgers hit Randall Cobb to win the NFC North that year. The Packers went to the playoffs instead of the Bears that year, and they beat them at Soldier Field, which seems to be a normal. So in case you forgot, which I'm sure you didn't, but in case you did, that's what happened that day.
Yeah, no, I still remember. It was 4th and 2, by the way. I trust me, I remember.
It was 4th and 8. No, so you did forget. It was 4th and 8, and it was 4th and 8, and it was Chris Conte that was the main culprit.
Oh, I remember that part. No question.
Anyways, before we get going, William, I know you on a personal level, obviously. I've known you since you were a child, and I don't mean that in a figurative sense. But tell us, who are you? What are you doing? Where are you from? All those sorts of things. And how do we get you on the show today?
Well, I come from Rockford, 815 represent, currently attending college at Augustana College, Rock Island, Quad Cities area. I write for Windy City Sports and Bear Goggles On, two Bears-centric podcasts, websites, blogs, however you want to say it. And that's why you have me on today, because a particular signing of yours spent a little bit of time in the Windy City.
That's right. Martellus Bennett did spend actually probably the most productive portion of his career was in Chicago. And that's where I want to start is just kind of tell us, you know, what does Martellus Bennett, what does he do well? You know, how do the Bears use him? We saw him twice a year, and it seemed like he used to light the Packers on fire. But the Packers' issues with covering tight ends has been well documented. But you saw him play 16 times a season. So how did the Bears use him, and what did he do best when he was in Chicago?
Well, he really developed this part of his game and put it on display when he went to New York for 1 year. But the best part of Martellus Bennett's game is in the red zone. If you look at all of his touchdowns, they're almost exclusively within 10 yards of the end zone. He, despite, you know, being, you know, a big tight end, he somehow manages to get lost in the red zone. And it leads to just remarkably easy touchdowns because Bears quarterbacks generally need the guy to be wide open in the end zone these days. And he's also in Chicago. The biggest development of his game has been his threat in intermediate routes, 5 yard outs, 5 yard ins, some crossing patterns. He generally does very well of creating separation, and he helps you keep that manageable down and distance. So if, you know, you have a botched, you know, passing play or run play that goes nowhere, second and 10, you can often rely on Bennett to get that 5 yards, 6 yards, maybe even 7 on some occasions. Puts you in a manageable third down. And then he's also a capable blocker. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about his, someone maybe call him a diva. At times he can take plays off. And of course that's generally seen on the blocking side of things when you talk about tight ends, but when he's invested, when he's trying, he's definitely a capable blocker as well.
Hey, Will, Jason, thanks again for coming on. Good to have you on, and thanks for being a good sport through the intro there. You owe us one for sure, of course. So you kind of led me right into my next question, which is you talked a little bit about Bennett's personality, his kind of being a diva, maybe taking plays off. That was a new one to me, but I knew that there were some question marks about him. He comes with obviously a family name, and you got Michael Bennett in Seattle, who's quite a personality. And in the few days, just watching Martellus Bennett tweet, he's obviously got a lot of that personality as well. So it makes sense that they're related. But with the limited things that you know about the Packers, do you see Bennett from a personality standpoint fitting in with the Packers and kind of how they typically construct their roster? And I don't remember if there was any particular incidents. I mean, did Bennett become a problem for the Bears internally, as far as you know?
Well, here's the thing about Bennett's personality. Everything is happy, and, you know, he goes by the nickname or kenning of Black Unicorn, for those of you who don't know. And as weird as it sounds, the more and more you watch him and his personality, it kind of makes sense, believe it or not. However, there was a bad breakup between him and the Bears in 2015, and that developed in 2014. But here's the thing. Bennett's happy if the team is doing well and the team is winning, something that the Packers, for the most part, have done a pretty good job of. Throughout the start last season, maybe you would have seen a little bit more, you know, outspoken things from Bennett. But if you look at it, there's been drama in Chicago when he was there, and he wasn't a problem. In 2013, there was a huge quarterback controversy for the Bears between Josh McCown and Jay Cutler. Yes, quarterback controversy. I know that Packers fans don't really know what that is, so I don't expect you to know too much about it. But despite all of that, you didn't see Martellus Bennett making, you know, offhand statements or indicating which quarterback he preferred. He fell in line in that particular instance. And throughout that entire season, you know, the Bears were in contention. We mentioned that NFC basically title game in week 17 that the soundbite's from. Just throughout all of that, Bennett stayed pretty quiet, fell in line. And for the most part, Chicago adored him. They enjoyed his outlandish personality. Almost a kind of callback to the 1985 Bears and like outlandish personalities that are performing well on the field. But then you get into 2014 where the wheels fell off the wagon for Chicago, and then 2015 where they're rebuilding but still nowhere near competitive. And that's where you really see his personality take a turn for the worse, and you see all the bad sides of it. In 2015, he went on IR for fractured ribs or something like that, and there was still a few weeks left in the year. It was completely conceivable if the Bears were in contention that he would have been back way sooner. but he had made public statements that he didn't agree with how the Bears used him in the red zone in 2015. And at that point, John Fox and Ryan Pace are front office and coaching staff that don't tolerate any type of comments like that that are made to the media, especially when they fire back at the front office and the coaching staff and the game plan. So when Martellus Bennett went on IR particularly early, it was kind of a harbinger that he was going to move on at the end of the season and that the marriage had definitely gone bad. However, like I mentioned before, if the Packers keep winning, I don't see how there could really be a problem with Martellus Bennett's personality in Green Bay.
Sticking to just on-the-field stuff, obviously Jared Cook made a pretty big impact for the Packers, and he was supposed to be a pretty big priority to be brought back as a free agent. And then those talks broke down, and everything was really confusing for a while, and then all of a sudden Martellus Bennett, the next Packers tight end. That's led to some questions. Obviously, fans tend to favor their own players when it comes to deciding which one is better when a team is interested in re-signing them. So it seems that, at least to me, that a lot of Packers fans are wondering whether Martellus Bennett is an upgrade to Jared Cook. Is he an upgrade over Jared Cook is my question. And if so, how is he an upgrade over Jared Cook?
This kind of goes two ways here. I would say overall for the Packers makeup as a team, I would say yes, it is an upgrade. When you look at Cook and Bennett, I would say Cook's a better blocker overall, but Bennett makes up for that by being a much better red zone target. You look at Cook's 2016 stats, he only had one touchdown. I think that's something that changes dramatically with Bennett. And you look at the Packers, they don't exactly have a whole lot of red zone threats. Jordy Nelson's a quick receiver, and he can get behind people and slice through zones on a quick slant route in the end zone. But if a team covers that up and, you know, Ty Montgomery isn't exactly a power back that can barrel through everyone. So you're kind of lacking receiving options on that end through what I've watched as far as a good red zone target. And Martellus Bennett at 6'6", you can split him out wide. Like I said earlier, he knows how to create space and get away from people in the red zone. I think that the dramatic difference that he will make in the red zone for the Packers makes him a head and shoulders better option than Jared Cook. Despite the fact that Jared Cook made a huge difference last season, I still think Bennett's going to be an overall upgrade.
You know, that's interesting, Will, that you say Cook is a better blocker, because one of the first initial reactions that I saw, and a lot of people were saying on Twitter, and granted, these are fans or maybe, you know, those that kind of study film on a casual level, were saying that in Bennett they're getting finally a good run-blocking tight end. And so I think there's a little bit of an expectation, at least from the fan base, that he can run block. But that's interesting to note. I do think a lot of fans agree that offers a little bit more. And so I think they're excited. He's a big target. You mentioned the red zone. Obviously, that makes sense. So in terms of defending Martellus Bennett, you know, Prince Amukamara just signed with the Bears, and I know they played together in New York, and obviously the Bears have some familiarity, still have some familiarity with Bennett from his days in Chicago. So will that, do you think that familiarity is going to kind of help the Bears mitigate him in the Packers offense, and does, from a Bears perspective and a Bears fan perspective, does Martellus Bennett now joining the Packers make the Packers even more scary, I guess I would say, than they have been?
Any receiver that walks out onto the field with Aaron Rodgers under center becomes a weapon. And when you have a person like Martellus Bennett, who has proven to be a weapon even without a great quarterback situation, yeah, I think that makes them more dangerous as a whole. In regards to Chicago being able to defend them, I don't think the Prince Amukamara familiarity with Bennett's going to be able to do a whole lot. Bennett's coming out party was kind of 2012, and he was still developing his game when he went to Chicago. Like I said, I believe that intermediate threat in his game really didn't develop until he made it to Chicago. You look at the receiving numbers for Bennett in New York, it was a lot of like 40-yard games and so on, and when he went to Chicago, you see a lot of those numbers go up, had a few 100-yard games, consistent production throughout each and every week. Whereas Bennett in New York was still kind of developing that part of his game. So I don't think the Amukamara part is going to matter as much. However, the Bears' familiarity in general, along with the acquisitions they made last season, especially with Jarrell Freeman. I think that will make a difference because Jarrell Freeman knows how to patrol that middle space, and then the Bears' familiarity with Bennett in general might help with that. Overall, Packers definitely are a more dangerous threat because of Bennett.
So what you're saying is with Freeman, the Bears have a linebacker who can cover a receiver and a tight end. Is that what I'm hearing? Because as Packers fans, we're all salivating over that idea. We've had that problem for several years. So, you know, good to note. And with some of the changes now that the Bears offense has made, I kind of want to break away from the Martellus Bennett for a second and just ask a general Bears question here, because the Bears added Mike Lennon as quarterback, and then just recently Alshon Jeffrey signed with the Eagles, so he's moving on from Chicago. So I kind of want to know what your take is on the Bears offense in its current state. I mean, can they, you know, a lot out there now are starting to say, okay, Jordan Howard is going to become huge because he's their primary offensive weapon now that Alshon Jeffrey's gone. So, I mean, do the Bears become a ground and pound offense with Howard carrying the ball 25 or 30 times a game, or what do you see the kind of the offensive game plan being for Chicago this year?
Without question, they need to lead on Jordan Howard to a large extent. However, we've seen in the past, UAB, he had some ankle issues, and while Howard never missed a game once he began the starting role, he dealt with a lot of nagging injuries, and that's not a guy who you want to put that kind of workload on between 25 and 30. Hopefully, you're keeping him in the 17 to 23 type of range, and I know that's not a ton less carries, but when you're talking about getting, you know, tackled by a linebacker running full speed at you, yeah, those two carries can, even two to, you know, five carries can make a huge difference as far as a life expectancy of a running back, let alone being able to stay healthy throughout the year. The big difference, or the big key factor for the Bears going into this year, is going to be whether their signings in Kendall Wright and Marcus Wheaton, two primary speed receivers, are they going to be able to stretch the field the way that they need to? Because if they're able to stretch the field vertically, that opens up a few more lanes for Howard to get through, and that'll allow his physical downhill style to really succeed. You look last year, and while the Bears have a good interior line, if they're able to bottle up Howard at the line of scrimmage, he doesn't have the breakaway speed like a LeSean McCoy to bounce runs to the outside successfully on many occasions. So creating those lanes by stretching the field vertically is going to be extremely key. Ideally, you would want ground and pound attack to be the primary way of how the Bears move the ball down the field, but between Howard's injury history and just, you know, relying on carrying the ball, you know, 25 to 30 times a game with likely an 8-man box, if you're going to be that reliant on the run, I don't see Howard holding up, and I don't see the Bears' offense holding up in that way. So they really need to rely on those speed receivers to stretch the field. Cameron Meredith's going to have to step up, and Kevin White's going to have to step up as well. They need to lean in some respects on their passing game in this respect.
Well, thank you again for coming on. Last question before we let you kind of get on with your day here. But recently you wrote about a 7,000-word story, and I'm exaggerating, but a really long story about Jay Cutler and his complicated legacy in Chicago. That his time in Chicago came to an end this week. A lot of fans made some jokes this week about Cutler's time coming to an end, and some people actually, even national media, made several jokes about it. I mean, obviously, he didn't fare that well against the Packers. And, you know, one playoff appearance in his time
Correct.
In Chicago. But, yeah, just the one. And then that was the NFC Championship game between the Bears and the Packers, which we know how that ended as well. But ultimately, your point was, you know, what is Jay Cutler's legacy in Chicago? Because from a numbers standpoint, Cutler's the greatest quarterback in the history of the Chicago Bears. And from a you know, narrative standpoint, Jay Cutler's the worst quarterback in the NFL. He's not a leader. Everyone hates him. All kinds of other really, in my opinion, nonsensical BS in the age of social media that really just probably wouldn't exist if he played 20 years ago. But who knows on that point. But in general, what is your assessment of the trade of, you know, looking back now that his time is over, what is your assessment of the trade of Jay Cutler and how his time in Chicago played out?
Well, Jay Cutler's narrative, like you said, it was a really long story because, you know, in 8 years, of course, there's going to be a lot of storylines, but there's so much to unpack with Jay Cutler's narrative. And I don't think that there is any quarterback in recent memory that has had as complicated as a legacy with so many what-ifs, so many things that weren't his fault exactly. I mean, everyone brings up the offensive coordinators. That's not his fault. What if he got one that finally got him into a rhythm? What if he had Gase for all of those 8 years? What kind of difference would that make? You look, a big part of the storyline, the 2010 championship game where he has a grade 2 sprain on his MCL, which means a partial tear in most respects. And that's, you don't think that's an injury you can generally play through. He tried to play through it in the first drive of that second half, but you could see he didn't have that force on the ball, so he decided to give the Bears what he thought was a better chance. Everyone questioned his toughness, and of course, when you see the actual injury come out, you're wondering, okay, well, that's probably the best decision. But then you look at Philip Rivers, who the year before played with a torn ACL in the AFC Championship game, if I remember right. So there's always this one little caveat to every little thing that Jay Cutler does that usually works against him. Yeah, it's interesting how his story ends, and with the 2016 this year, he played against the Giants. He came back from his injuries earlier on, and the season was pretty much done at this point, especially with an awful loss to Tampa Bay in week 9. And then he's playing against the Giants. It's a depleted roster. Kevin White's hurt. I don't think Alshon Jeffrey was playing that game. And Jay Cutler leads the Bears to like a 16-0 lead. And the Giants come back. And he brings the Bears back within striking distance. But pressure breaks down. Another thing's like the offensive line usually hasn't protected him throughout his time in Chicago. And he ends up throwing an interception and what was supposed to be, you know, hopefully a last hurrah comeback attempt, you know, kind of, you know, salvage a little bit of that legacy. But to go back, but, you know, it ends in an interception, and that's very fitting for his legacy in many respects. You asked about the trade at the end of the day. Bears traded 2 first-round picks and a 3rd, as well as Kyle Orton, to the Broncos in exchange for Jay Cutler and a 5th-round pick. And when you make that kind of move as an organization, you really expect that to propel you to the next level. And to many respects, it did not. We mentioned it a couple times already on the show. It's one playoff appearance, one playoff win. You don't expect to spend 2 first-round picks on that and on a quarterback to only get one playoff appearance. And like we said, like I said earlier, it's unfortunate in a lot of ways. 2011, they were on a roll. They were 7-3. Cutler dives to make a tackle against the San Diego Chargers and breaks his thumb. And there goes the season. They didn't win another game. They end 7-9. They had really awful defeats against the Chiefs, the Tim Tebow-led Denver Broncos, and so on. And then 2012, the Bears start 7-1. Then Cutler gets concussed on Sunday Night Football against the Texans. The season falls apart after that. They have a really humiliating loss to the 49ers and then to the, goodness gracious, the Vikings led by Christian Ponder. That's who it was. And then that's kind of where everything falls apart from 2013 onward. So at the end of the day, you have to really consider Cutler's legacy a failure. And you can be a failure and still be a lot of other things. You know, statistically, like you mentioned, he's the best quarterback in Chicago Bears history. And in my opinion, he is. He brought stability to a position that wasn't seen in Chicago since Jim McMahon. So to say that he was a horrible quarterback, no. But when you look at the trade and what Cutler was supposed to bring to the Bears, it's a failure. Because they made that trade because the defense was there. They had a couple weapons with Matt Forte and developing others. He had Brandon Marshall for a couple years when the Bears were really a competitor, and all he got them was one playoff appearance and one playoff win.
Interesting stuff there. Will, thanks again for coming on. You guys can follow him. A lot of you guys probably listening to the show aren't Bears fans, but if you got friends who are, check his stuff out. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Will Ingalls, Ingalls. Check out Windy City Sports for Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, Cubs, White Sox, some local area stuff as well. They do all kinds of stuff. And you'll even catch me on some of that stuff as well, talking Bears, Bulls, Cubs, Blackhawks, whatever. Just getting some stuff around the area. Will, thanks for coming on. Appreciate your time, and I will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Will.
Again, that was Will Ingalls of Windy City Sports talking about Martellus Bennett and a little insight on the offseason of the Chicago Bears. We were talking about Martellus Bennett, though, and we got his opinion, but Jason and I want to talk about our opinion of it specifically. First, let's talk about the Martellus Bennett move and some of the wrinkle that it creates. So what are your thoughts specifically on Martellus Bennett and the wrinkle that comes with Jared Cook? And let me just kind of recap for those of you. This is what happened on Friday. Thursday, there was a thought that the Packers were close to agreeing to a deal with Jared Cook, and then talks broke down. And then Friday afternoon, there was a report that 100% Jared Cook is not going to be back in Green Bay. And there was nothing that leaked after that. It was just Jared Cook's not coming back. That's all that there was. The other thing that came out of that was it wasn't posturing to the media. It wasn't anything like that. It was just that Jared Cook wasn't going to be back in Green Bay. There wasn't really any other specifics given. And then about, 20 or 30 minutes after that, Adam Schefter tweeted that Martellus Bennett was signing with the Green Bay Packers, which I had to double take because, I mean, anybody who follows the Packers knows the Packers, this isn't really their thing. They don't sign free agents. You know, they sign street free agents, guys like, you know, Julius Peppers or guys that have been released. But Martellus Bennett was a true unrestricted free agent. And the best tight end on the market. So the whole thing to me, my thoughts on it are, I said, you know, I wrote a story for FanRag that Jason, we discussed a little bit, was if five free agents the Packers could consider. Something I said was, if the markets were similar, that Martellus Bennett is a better player than Jared Cook. Now, I know Will said that Jared Cook is a better blocker than Martellus Bennett. I don't think that's true. I think I think Martellus Bennett is everything that Jared Cook is, but better. I think that Martellus Bennett is better after the catch. And really, my theory in a nutshell is this. The thing that we kept talking about with Jared Cook was that he was talented, but held back by bad quarterbacks. You know, he played with a lot of bad quarterbacks. Well, okay, so Jared Cook's quote-unquote best season, if you want to call last season his best season, which is really up for debate, was with Aaron Rodgers. Okay. Martellus Bennett has been productive with Jay Cutler and Josh McCown. Now, Jay Cutler's not a terrible quarterback, but Josh McCown is. Martellus Bennett's been productive with some really poor, or at least a poor quarterback in his lifetime. So I was ecstatic. Last offseason when the Packers were looking for a tight end, Martellus Bennett was my number one target. It was just a matter of, will the Bears release him? Because he was on their roster, and obviously they were not going to trade him within the division. Ultimately, they traded him to the Patriots, which really stuck in my craw, because, of course, they traded him to the Patriots. But Martellus Bennett was the guy that I really wanted. Now, the Jared Cook wrinkle is unfortunate because it just makes me wonder. It really depends on what you read, whether the Packers offered more money to Jared Cook than they did Martellus Bennett or less money to Jared Cook than they did Martellus Bennett. But I don't know what kind of advice he's getting from his agent, because Jared Cook has chased money and played for bad teams. And now if his agent was trying to kind of play the game and get him a couple more million bucks, now he lost out on a chance to play with the best quarterback he ever had, because the Packers have also signed Lance Kendricks, and that was another story that we'll get to here in a minute. We'll go with it now because it kind of all goes with together. Is Lance Kendricks pretty much slams the door shut on Jared Cook coming back, because you're not going to have three tight ends like that all on the same team when you also have Richard Rodgers on the roster, because there's only so many opportunities to get these guys on the field. Now, something I had thought of when they signed Bennett was, if Jared Cook's market tanks and it's a similar deal that he got last year, was you could bring in both of those guys. And why not? Because I've always banged that drum of having two athletic tight ends on the roster. Well, then they signed Lance Kendricks yesterday, and that's the second athletic tight end. There you go. Now they have two athletic tight ends on the roster, plus Richard Rodgers to really settle into a role of red zone only caliber target. But I'm excited for this. Two athletic tight ends on the roster is something I have banged the drum for on this team for as long as I can remember. I don't know what I ever had to do to finally get them to listen to me. I doubt that they listen to me, but they finally have done something that I've been asking for forever. Martellus Bennett happens to do with the guy that I really wanted in Martellus Bennett. I think he's going to be an asset in the run game as far as a blocker goes. I think he's going to be an asset with yards after the catch. And he's a really strange guy. We mentioned that earlier, but he is entertaining as all hell. His Twitter follow, I just started following him after he signed with the team. And, yeah, he's entertaining as hell. I'm really excited about this. I'm excited about the Lance Kendrick signing. It's unfortunate because I don't know if we'll ever know what really happened with Jared Cook. I don't know if he postured and that caused Ted Thompson to say, forget it, we're going to go sign Martellus Bennett. I don't know if they just kept bulking at prices and that pissed somebody off. I don't know what happened there, but it just seemed strange. It's just a weird story that I don't know if we'll ever fully know what happened. And then the other weird part was after they signed Bennett, Jared Cook took to Twitter at about 1 o'clock in the morning and taking damage control, saying he never turned down a deal, and he thanked the Packers for their time there. So I don't know what happened there. But, Jason, I've rambled on, and I've kept saying I don't know what happened. Ultimately, Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks are in. Jared Cook is out. What are your thoughts on the Packers' tight end position and their kind of game of musical chairs that they played there?
Yeah, so we were talking earlier about how the news broke, and I think I think you and I were in communication, not that we were texting and driving, because we weren't. Well, I use speech to text when I'm trying to send messages and driving, so I can minimize obviously the lack of attention to the road. But I think we were in communication when the news broke about Bennett, because I found out from you that Martellus Bennett was a Packer. And in true Jacob Westendorf fashion, all you sent to me was, in the middle of a conversation about other free agents and other stuff that the Packers were doing, Martellus Bennett. And I'm thinking, is that an idea? Or, you know, and then all of a sudden, he's a Packer. I check, he's a Packer. That was the excuse me.
It was surrounded by expletives. I'll also point that out. Jason, are you okay?
I'm back. Sorry. I hit the – well, first of all, I had a little bug in my throat there, and then I hit the mute button, and I'm talking through it and realize that I'm on mute and you can't hear a thing I'm saying. Sorry about that. So, yeah, we were in communication during that. That was crazy. But it also – the whole Jared Cook thing, you know, and I think you had to bring up the Lance Kendricks signing to really bring it all together, tie it all together, because, and I think you mentioned it, with Kendricks coming to and blossoming with the Rams, that was one of the reasons why they were able to let Jared Cook go last year. And so that's why he was available to the Packers. And now here he becomes a second option for Green Bay. And now all of a sudden, you're right, I don't, Jared Cook is not coming back to Green Bay. That's definitely, that chapter is over with. And I think by virtue of that tweet that you talked about that Cook sent out, and I happened to be on Twitter when that came out in real time, and he wrote it in a two-part tweet, and the first part was, you know, I didn't turn down any offer, but I will say this, dot, dot, dot. And then he waited a couple minutes, and then he basically thanked Packers fans for all their support and the team for the great season that he had and wanted to go out on a high note. And like you said, Jacob, I probably will never know all the details of it, or, if we do, it'll be a while from now, because the Packers are very private about stuff like that. They're very big on their image. Players don't want to make themselves look bad. Jared Cook still has to find a new team, so he doesn't want to sound like he's going out on a sour note and kind of get that question mark above his head about whether or not he's even going to be a good teammate. So we all wanted Cook back, and he was one of the free agents that were done with the Packers that they wanted to re-sign because he had such a pivotal role. But I think fans were also really clinging on to him because of the comments that Aaron Rodgers made at the end of the season about wanting him back and how much he bonded with him last season. But, you know, as far as Bennett, you know, you wrote about this, I think, last year before he signed about him coming and being another option for the Packers. And the biggest surprise was, besides the fact that it wasn't Jared Cook, that was that Bennett is a true unrestricted free agent. So, you know, he counts against the compensatory pick formula. all those things didn't really seem to make sense. But I agree. I agree with you. I agree with Will. This is an upgrade at the tight end position because, to me, the one thing that nobody's really talked about yet is I just think Martellus Bennett loves the game of football. I think he loves to play football. You can tell in his effort. I mean, you don't continue to prolong your career and extend your career and find new situations to go to unless you really love the game. And I think that he and obviously his brother Michael, too, they both love this game. So that's what the Packers have been lacking is a little bit of that attitude, a little bit of that swagger, a little bit of that moxie on the offensive side of the ball. And you watch some of the film from even last year, and Bennett's stiff-arming guys and running them over, and that's what we thought Cook was going to do. Cook was supposed to be this big yak machine, supposed to catch the ball, get all these yards after the catch, and be tough to bring to the ground. And unfortunately, he missed six games, so the injury obviously had an impact on his season, and he was able to make a huge catch in Dallas that we'll never forget. And I know we talked about that on our last show. But on a more consistent basis, Martellus Bennett gives this team just an incredible thing that defenses are going to have a tough time defending. And then with Kendricks, you know, he's going to be excited to play in Green Bay. He's a Milwaukee native. This has always been his dream to play for the Packers, and now he's got Aaron Rodgers. You know, Rams fans, it's funny. I've seen all these tweets from Rams fans wanting to know why they're the tight end developmental, you know, league for the Packers. And it's true. For some reason, they just kind of end up in Green Bay. And if these, you know, if he turns out to be even what Jared Cook was last year, and then you've also got Bennett, great things for the offense. So, I mean, on the offensive side of the ball, I'm excited for these moves. And, you know, I there's going to be a contingent of Packers fans out there who are never going to be happy if Ted Thompson signed 10 guys off the streets that had names. They'll still say he left one or two short of doing everything he could to win a Super Bowl. But this absolutely shows a commitment by the Packers to keep the ball in the air, to have success through the pass, to convert in the red zone, and continue doing those things that are going to win them the 10, 11, 12 games that they've been winning. So I'll give it an A. I'll give it two thumbs up. On paper, barring injury, it's hard to complain with it.
Yeah, hard to complain about anything they did at the tight end position. I mean, we were talking about just bringing back Jared Cook and having to spend a draft pick on an athlete. I mean, now you mentioned to me, I mean, they took that tight end need and just nuked it. I mean, I have a hard time seeing them spend a draft pick on a tight end, which is unfortunate because this is a deep tight end class. But, I mean, Bennett's a three-year deal. The terms on Lance Kendricks have yet to be disclosed, but I got a hard time believing that's a short-term deal. Those are two young guys that'll be around for the foreseeable future. And the best news of this is Aaron Rodgers gets to keep those guys. And Mike McCarthy loves his tight ends. Again, it was something I've been banging the drum for quite some time because I've never understood why the Packers tight end position looks like one athlete. And really, until Jared Cook was around last season, it was maybe one athlete. And then a lot of guys that just don't make a whole lot of sense. So now they have two athletic guys. At that position, their offense is starting to take shape, and it looks like it could be really good, and we'll talk about some more of that stuff later. It's not perfect, but it's going to be a pretty scary-looking passing game for the most part. A couple other guys outside of the organization before we get to guys in-house that the Packers have been connected to are Eagles edge rusher Connor Barwin and former Green Bay Packer Devon House. Now, one update since we've started that show is Bill Huber says that a source told him Devon House is likely to sign soon, and he doesn't expect that to be the Packers, but we'll see on that. As we've seen, you know, TJ Lang followed the Seahawks on Twitter, and he did not end up signing with the Seahawks, so that all can change very quickly. So we'll see on that. But the question I have is, do any of these players, either of these players, Barwin or House, interest you? And my answer is they do, you know, barring the price, of course. Barwin's an edge rusher. He's a veteran as far as that position goes, and he was kind of miscast in a 4-3. He had a big year his last year in a 3-4, and then they put him in he's a square peg in a round hole. He just doesn't fit there. To be fair, one scout did tell Bill Huber, of Packer Report, of course. Check out Bill. He does some really good stuff, and I'm not saying that just because I used to intern for him. Bill does some really great things out there for Packer Report every year, so check those things out. But Barwin, a scout told him that he looked like he was just done, out of gas, was the phrase that was used. But for a short-term deal, the Packers have been in contact with him, not just connected, like the phrase is they've been in contact with him. So that means they've at least expressed some interest. Out of gas could be because he's stuck in something he doesn't belong. But for the right price, I mean, this is a guy who had 14 and a half sacks not that long ago. I'm not saying he's going to have that many, but the Packers right now, with Nick Perry back, they still just have Perry, Clay Matthews, and Kyler Fackrell currently under contract. Now, I imagine that they'll add something, but depth at pass rush positions is never a bad thing to have. And a veteran, we saw it with Julius Peppers. You bring in a veteran to somebody, the Eagles were never really contenders during Barwin's time around there. Not quite to the level that the Packers are, especially. You can see what that does to a pass rusher when they feel reborn. Give him a chance to rush the passer for a team that has a lead consistently, a team that's winning games like that. And he's a decent run defender, too. So that is interesting as well. Devon House, as soon as he was released, I mean, not just because he's a former Packer, but I'm just saying, like, you know, the Packers were never going to sign A.J. Bouye or who was the other corner? Stephon Gilmore. Those were guys that were going to – I mean, you saw their contracts. They're both making over $15 million a season. That's just not something the Packers have ever done. Even when Ron Wolf was around, other than Reggie White, those aren't guys that they've signed. It's not what they do. So with that in mind, the Packers, I still think, need a veteran cornerback, even if they do draft a couple. And Matt Miller's scouting notebook says the source told him that they're going to attack cornerback, probably in round one or maybe later. And it could be a couple guys. Now, I still do believe in Demaryius Randall, and I still do believe in Quentin Rollins. I think that they played injured for most of last year. But even still, as we saw last year, covering yourself at cornerback is never going to be a bad thing either. And I thought Devon House is a veteran. He didn't have a good year last year, but according to several reports, the Jaguars changed what they were doing from a scheme standpoint, and it didn't really help him. In the previous year, he had a great year in that first year of Gus Bradley's system, and he was pretty good during his time in Green Bay. He just didn't fit what the Packers were trying to do from a price standpoint. So he does interest me. He doesn't fit into that compensatory pick formula. I imagine his price isn't going to be very high. And he already knows what the Packers are trying to do from a defensive standpoint, so you don't even have to reteach him the system. Both of these players interest me, and I don't think you're going to have to pay an arm and a leg to get them. And there are positions that the Packers need some help at, and I don't think a veteran presence is a bad thing to have at these two positions. So, Jason, what do you think of Connor Barwin and Devon House?
Well, when you put them together, it's a kind of a unique question as compared to if they were kind of separated out. I have a hard time kind of – if I had to pick one or the other, it's kind of hard to say because these both fit a need that the Packers have. And I know that they're going to get after, obviously, both of these positions in the draft, and I think they're going to address them earlier than later, being pass rush and corner. So I don't know that either of them are the savior or the answer, but I think I agree with you in that they're both valuable depth. Now, Connor Barwin, I remember Huber talking about that scout saying he's out of gas, but I think he's the type of player who, if you watch how he plays, he seems to be a high-character guy. And that has nothing to do with fitting into Green Bay, and we're not going to go to the whole Packer people thing because I think that whole theory is, you know, been debunked over the past couple of years. I mean, you know, every team's got guys that go on both sides of the tracks, I guess we'll say. But I do think that Connor Barwin, who has said that Green Bay is one of the teams that interests him in terms of where he'd like to play, and obviously you're limited when you're a linebacker, typically in a 3-4 base type of a system. There aren't as many teams that run that in the NFL, although there are more and more that are coming on board. But I think that you're right, Jacob. It could infuse some life into him if he comes into Green Bay's defense and he finds success and you've got some guys there to take the pressure off of you, namely Clay Matthews, if they move Matthews inside or if he's on the opposite end and they do some other creative things with Nick Perry. We don't know what's going to happen with Dayton Jones. I'd like to think the Packers are going to bring Dayton Jones back, and if they do, I think that creates a really good situation for a guy like Barwin to come in and not have to play full-time snaps. Not that you want to bring him in and spend more money on him and then not play him. But like you said, I think you're right. He's probably not going to command a huge salary. And I think if Green Bay is truly interested, because we've heard rumblings that they've actually reached out to him already, that he might be willing to do what it takes to come play in Green Bay. We all know how Ted Thompson works. I think one of the things that happened with Jared Cook was, hey, here's our price. This is our price point. You know what it is. If you can find something else, go find it. If not, we'll be here if you want to talk. So I'd love to have Barwin. I'd love to kick the tires and see what he's got. You know, if nothing else, you sign him to a deal that isn't going to bite you if for some reason you decide at the end of training camp that it's just too risky or there's somebody else that you bring in who's better and you can kind of part ways. But I think he's definitely worth kicking the tires on. Devon House, I like House a lot, and I keep going back to the game against the Atlanta Falcons in 2014 when Sam Shields, the high-paid starting cornerback for the Packers, could not keep up with Julio Jones, and Devon House came in and did a little bit of a better job. That was one game. It's a very small sample size, and I can't ignore the fact that Devon House had such a down season last year, but you make a good point, too, in that he is familiar with the Packers' defensive system. So I think he still holds value. Now, it sounds like I saw the same thing from Bill Huber earlier today. It sounds like Devon House is going somewhere else. So I don't know if that's some posturing by his agent to try to eke out a few more dollars, but it sounds like there had at least been some conversation between the Packers and him and his camp. And it would be, after what we saw from Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins, injuries aside last year, I think it would put a lot of people's minds at ease knowing that you have another veteran who's familiar with the system and who's done okay in it. I mean, you said he was a good player. You know, he was a good player his first year in Jacksonville, and he'd been good with the Packers. I would say good's adequate is accurate. I wouldn't say he was great. But I do think it would put some minds at ease, especially with Green Bay picking later in rounds. I don't know how much of an impact corner you're going to find at the end of the first round. Now, this is a deep class. They could hit pay dirt on a guy in the second or third round, for example, or even in their first rounder, because there's just so much talent. But I'm kind of taking the conservative approach here because that's what the Packers tend to do. And so realistically, in my mind, it would make more sense to bring in a guy like House and then also draft a cornerback early. And then I think you've got yourself set up for some success because you have to hope and assume that Randall and Rollins aren't going to be as bad in 2017 as they were in 2016. Health has a lot to do with that. But you know, everybody thought Davante Adams was done. Everybody thought he was sunk and he wasn't going to be any good in the Packers offense. And then sure enough, it wasn't in his second year. It was in his third year that he broke out. And sometimes maybe it just takes these guys an extra year. You know, hopefully, especially in the case of Randall, since he was a first-round pick, he understands the off-the-field prep and things that he needs to be doing to be a starting cornerback in this league. And the Packers can benefit from that in this next year. So I like both. I'm definitely interested in both. So, you know, by the time this show's over with, House might have already signed with someone else, and it's a moot point. But, hey, I'm all for if you bring these two guys in and Ted Thompson doesn't do a single thing outside of the draft and undrafted free agency, I would be totally fine with it.
That's outside the organization. Let's go inside the organization and start with the guy they re-signed, and that was NFP. Nick Perry re-signed before free agency was even open. It was a 5-year, $60 million deal. Simply put, what are your thoughts on the move? My opinion, it's the only move they could make. Like I said, they went into free agency where the only edge rushers on their team were Clay Matthews and Kyler Fackrell. You can't not re-sign Nick Perry, a guy who was great for you last year. When he's been healthy, he's been very good. Now, if you have questions about his durability, I understand that. But 26-year-old pass rushers make a lot of money. That's just how it works. Nick Perry's a young guy. He's an ascending player. And essentially, the contract breaks down to where it's about a 2-year contract with 3 1-year options. It breaks down that way to where the Packers pay as they go. And if I would be surprised if Perry sees the full 5 years of that contract. We'll see if that ends up being the case. But I'm not surprised that they re-signed him. I'm surprised that he didn't hit the open market. I wonder what his deal would have looked like had he been able to hit the open market. because he was the best available pass rusher, especially after Melvin Ingram and Chandler Jones were franchise tagged. Nick Perry is the best available pass rusher, while no longer available. But Perry was great last year. He's been good when he's healthy. I don't think there's any question about that. That was the number one priority in free agency, in my opinion. I don't think, as it played out, I don't think it was very close. If I said anything otherwise before on anything else, then please feel free to come and hit me in the back of the head, because I was wrong to say otherwise. But Nick Perry should have been the number one priority to bring back on this roster, because he was, other than maybe Mike Daniels and HaHa Clinton Dix, and you can have an argument if you'd like on any of those guys, he was the best player on their defense last year. And he played a decent portion of the season with one hand. You had no other choice, I don't think. Jason, any thoughts on Nick Perry?
Man, Jacob, it sounds like Ted Thompson's kind of really giving his those who doubt him not a whole lot to work with. It sounds like he's debunking a lot of these theories that he can't be the GM anymore. He doesn't do a good job. It's time for a change. Remember all these things we were talking about when the Packers were in their slump and the talent deficiency at corner and some of the things that kind of snake bit this team. But I couldn't agree with you more. Nick Perry had to get done, and he did. And if you look at the deal, he tops out at $14 million and some change in 2018 and 2019. The way that the salary caps are going up and the way that edge rushers are getting paid, because it is a premium position, Jacob, you called it the equivalent of the quarterback of the defense. It's the guy you have to pay. By the time that comes around, I'll bet you that's going to be an undermarket value, and the Packers are going to be getting a steal if Nick Perry can stay healthy and if he can continue to do what he did in 2016. So once again, the Packers strike, and he only counts five and some change against the cap this coming season. So they did a good job with the contract. It had to get done. When the money first came out, my eyeballs kind of bulged a little. But after I sat back, looked at the structure of it, it makes a lot of sense, and they had to do it. You know, you've got Clay Matthews, who's kind of on the downturn. I don't think that he's going to resurge. His body just doesn't seem to be able to handle being an outside linebacker. So I think you have to mitigate some of the, you know, what's going to be lost there, and also keep a primo pass rusher. And, you know, I think you're right, Jacob. You know, people forget how good Perry was in his defense. I would buy the argument that he was their best defensive player. He's one of the best run defenders, one of the best run linebackers or run defending linebackers in the NFL. So loved it. And I'm glad that he's back. It just gives them a little bit of security there, but I think they need to address the position and build some depth there, because Jaron Elliott was not tendered. And I don't know if he's coming back or if the door has already been closed on that. And then what do you do with Clay Matthews? Because it's obvious he can't play 16 games on the outside. So they're going to have to move him inside a little bit, which means they're going to need another answer on the outside. Why don't we just, not to hijack the script here, but it's just jumping over one thing here, but I think this is the perfect time to talk about the fact that I think the Packers did the right thing by not bringing Julius Peppers back, because he's on the downslide. You know, he signed with Carolina, he's going back to the Panthers. Okay, to me it's a novelty signing, he wants to finish his career there, but I think they had to move on from Peppers, but that does leave more of a hole on the, you know, at the linebacker position. So it was, while we're watching all this money fly around and we're seeing all these free agents get signed, the Packers make a huge splash move. It happens to be one of their own guys who technically would have been a free agent. But Perry's a primo guy, and he finally bet on himself, and he won last year after 2 1-year deals, and the Packers not picking up his option, and showed that when he's healthy, and even when he's not totally healthy, but he can still be on the field, he's a force to be reckoned with. So, Happy that 53 is going to be around for a while, and looking forward to hopefully a second solid season from him. It would be great if he could make a Pro Bowl. If he does, he gets 10-plus sacks this season. This is just a phenomenal thing for the Packers. It's just another feather in the cap of the team, and keeping a guy that they drafted in the first round. And he was a little risky because he was a defensive end at USC and clearly made the successful transition to linebacker. So, I mean, the Packers look really good in this deal.
Yeah, and you mentioned Julius Peppers. I talked about it about as soon as the season ended. It was time. It's time to move on from him. He was just older. You know, I know he made some impactful plays down the stretch. I heard Hal Barkish from Pro Football Weekly on a radio station the other day and said he may have been the Packers' most impactful defender down the stretch, and I'm just, what the hell are you watching? Like, yeah, Julius Peppers made some big plays, and I know that. But for every one play he gives you, there's several snaps where he's just invisible. And you know what? The Packers, they just don't need a guy on the, if they're going to do that, if they're going to give a guy a bunch of snaps like they did Peppers, I would prefer it be a younger guy. So, for example, if they're going to bring back Dayton Jones, and then I would prefer Pepper snaps go to someone like a first-round pick or someone of that ilk. But I'm not at all. I'm upset from the standpoint of the Packers were unable to get Julius Peppers a Super Bowl ring, and I don't think he's going to be able to get one in Carolina. But that's about the only reason I'm upset, is that they were unable to get Peppers a ring, and now I think he's going to retire without one. He was a great player. He's a Hall of Famer, and now I think he's going to retire without one. But that's the right move. The other guy, there's two guys that they have been unable to re-sign. The first one that came across was Micah Hyde, and I can't understand why this is as controversial. I get it. Here's the thing. 5 years, $32.5 million was the deal. News broke late Wednesday night because the league year opened on Thursday. News broke late Wednesday night that the Packers had not made an offer and that he was aggressively pursuing other options. Here's the thing. I understand he made some big plays down the stretch for the Packers, and I understand he was versatile. And from the standpoint of he played safety, he played slot corner. I also know that he had a really great play against the Dallas Cowboys where he read the play. He made the interception on that bubble screen. But I also know that a lot of things that went wrong in the Packers defense were also at Hyde's expense. Like, just because Hyde made a couple big plays down the stretch doesn't mean I'm just going to forget the fact that Micah Hyde's not a great player, and the Buffalo Bills are paying him like he's a great player. So I don't have a problem with the fact that the Packers kind of – I guess I have a problem with the fact that they didn't make him an offer because I think that he was worth about $3 million. But if they had word that his market was going to be $6 or $7 million, then there's almost no point in wasting their time with an offer that's never going to be close to good enough. But – the offer to Hyde, the money that Hyde got, I mean, that's a lot of money for somebody that's not very good in coverage. And you can tell me that he plays all these positions, that's great, but that's just fact. He's not good in coverage. I know he has the interceptions the last couple of years, that's great, but he's not good in coverage. That's just fact. He's not very fast, and he's just not a great player, and that's what they're paying him to be in Buffalo now. They're paying him to be a great player, and he's not. Micah Hyde is a average player, and he does a lot of different things. And I think that a lot of people are being blinded by the fact that he had a solid six-game stretch by the end of the season. And the Packers did the right thing here by not letting a six- or seven-game stretch dictate a new contract for somebody. Because that is where you get hurt, and that's what the Buffalo Bills did. They're letting a six- or seven-game stretch dictate a $6.5 million contract per season to somebody else. What this contract does, what this lack of contract does, is it forces the Packers to get younger and faster in their secondary. And that's something everybody keeps saying, that the Packers need to get faster in their secondary. Well, you can't do that if you keep putting slow guys in your secondary. If you keep Micah Hyde around, they're still going to have Gunter, Randall, and Rollins next season. I suppose you don't have to keep Gunter, but Randall and Rollins you do. If you have Hyde around, that's one more slow guy in that secondary. I have no problem with them not bringing back Micah Hyde. I was cool if Hyde came back at about $3 million a season, but he got vastly overpaid. Packers absolutely made the right call on this. Jason, what do you think about Micah Hyde, and we'll move forward to TJ Lang?
Well, it's just I feel kind of bad, slightly a little bit on your account, Jacob, because you just finally came around to liking Micah Hyde after the Dallas game. You know, it was like he was around for one game where you were a really big Micah Hyde believer, and now he's gone, and he's in Buffalo. So I'm sorry for your loss, tongue-in-cheek. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I like Micah Hyde more as a person than I do as a football player. His athletic ability is limited. He does a lot of things for the team. This is going to open up a hole on punt returns, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what the Packers can do. But it seems like Green Bay is shifting towards, hey, they finally realize what we've all known for the last few years. They need more speed on the field. Speed, unfortunately, negates ability in some senses and in some cases. And this is definitely one of them. Micah Hyde was a smart player. He did a lot of really good things, but he just got caught out of position too many times, and he just wasn't great in coverage, like you said. You know, all those things I agree with. What's happening, it's interesting, is that teams are finding themselves in a situation where they have a need. And if it happens to be a weak year at a position, like maybe the safety crop this year wasn't very strong, and honestly, I don't know, because the Packers don't have a needed safety, so I wasn't looking at who's coming out at safety. And let's just say Hyde is a safety for the sake of this conversation, because I know that he's a defensive back. He could be a corner as well. But it just seems like the Bills were kind of, you know, he kind of benefited from the timing more so than what he's actually worth. The Bills needed a safety. Hyde was out there. Maybe he was the best of what was available. And so because the market value is X, all of a sudden Micah Hyde is signing a five-year, $32.5 million deal. And so, you know, maybe his timing worked out for him really well. And so players, you might start to see players take more risks with leaving their current team because they're like, hey, I'm coming out in a year where there's going to be a lot of my position that – or there's not a lot of my position that's going to be out there. I'm not worth this money, but I can get it because this is what the market bears. And I think the Packers absolutely did the right thing. Had they spent this kind of money on Micah Hyde, I would have started to really question who's pulling – you know, at whoever pulled the trigger on that deal, because I think they can find a younger player, a faster player, and bring them up. And we still can't give up on Randall Rollins and those guys. And as far as the safety position goes, they're different players, but I'm okay to see what Kentrell Bryce can do this year at the safety position. So I will miss Micah Hyde, but it's because he's a high character guy, and we're going to move on to another high character guy that we're going to have to get used to not seeing in green and gold. And I think that the theme is that one of the things that we get most wrapped up in and makes it difficult for some to hear about some of these free agents moving on is because we know them as players. We know them a little bit as people. We don't know everything about them as people, but we know them a little bit as people. And so you just have to kind of get over that initial 24, 48 hour, you know, period of the emotional side of it, the side of it that has you personally connected to that player. And then realize that from a business standpoint, it had to be done. So good luck, Micah Hyde in Buffalo. On we move.
Can I be a homer for a second?
Of course, absolutely.
Real peppers. Okay, moving on. Yes, you mentioned the other player that has since defected, and we hate him now. No, I'm kidding. I don't hate him. TJ Lang. Today, as soon as I sent the script out, I said, TJ, if you could make your decision before the show starts, that'd be great. That's not the decision I wanted you to make, though. TJ Lang signed a three-year deal with the Detroit Lions. The deal is worth about $9.5 million average annual value. It's about $19 million guaranteed. And according to Rob Domofsky, the Packers' best offer was 3 years, $21.5 million with $6.5 million guaranteed. And the Packers didn't want to go above $7 million in average annual value for a guard. And we heard this a lot over the last year or so, that the Packers don't really value the guard position. That really comes from Ron Wolf's school of thought, honestly, that – the Packers just aren't going to value that position. And, you know, they kind of extended themselves just from the standpoint that they even offered him the third contract. You know, typically the Packers wouldn't even do that. They released Josh Sitton before even having a chance to offer him another contract. So That's two Pro Bowl guards that the Packers have lost in about 6 months, actually about 7 months now, actually. Lang is gone. He signed with the Detroit Lions. On the surface, it sucks because Lang is a great player, great Twitter follow, by all accounts, a great guy in the locker room, things like that, always an entertaining player to be around. My limited interaction with him has been very cool. But from a business side of things, at almost $10 million a year and $19 million guaranteed, I can't argue with Ted Thompson here. I just, you know, for a player who's going to be 30 in September, he's having another hip surgery. He broke his foot twice last year. I know he's been available, but at the same time, you're not giving someone a free agent contract for what they've done. You're giving it from what you think they will do. And this is a guy who, you know, you're kind of betting that maybe he will be hurt. I mean, you can't predict the future, obviously. There's no crystal ball. But Lang's been available, but you can see signs of his body starting to break down. I can't argue with Ted Thompson when it comes to this as far as the money that he got. If that's the market, that is what it is. And if there's something that I do know about Ted Thompson, it's the answer is David Bakhtiari, Corey Lindsley, Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, JC Treader. That list goes on and on of solid offensive linemen he takes in the fourth round or later that become pretty good players. Maybe that answer is Kyle Murphy this year. The one thing I do know is if the question is asked of who's the starting right guard going to be here on March 12th, I don't know the answer. I do know that as long as the answer is not Don Barclay, I feel pretty good about it. And I do know the other answer is that the Packers have David Bakhtiari, who's great. They have Lane Taylor, who acquitted himself very well last year. They have Corey Lindsley, who's above average. And they have Brian Bulaga, who's great when he's healthy. And Jason Spriggs is a very good reserve tackle, or a very talented reserve tackle. As far as the tackle position goes, they're in very good shape. The interior, I expect them to attack that in the draft. And the good news is, if you redo your list of team needs, tight end isn't one of them anymore. So you can cross that off your list, and you can add interior offensive line, I guess. So, you know, it's a good year for interior offensive line. There's something for me to plug my Cheesehead TV draft piece. Interior offensive line is a good list. I will let you know, there's about a snowball's chance in hell that the Packers' first-round pick is going to be an offensive guard. So if you want to ask me that, I will. That's about the only guarantee that I'll make as far as what I know about the right guard position. So, Jason, what are your thoughts on – let's start with TJ Lang, and then we can kind of start going into maybe the future there. But TJ Lang specifically, are you upset? What do you think about what transpired there – and ultimately what he got and what the Packers' offer was? Do you think they made him a fair offer?
I don't know. I think the idea was Lang was going to go out and collect offers and bring them back to the Packers and give them the first right of refusal is what he said. So I don't know if Green Bay gave him an idea of what they would be willing to match and said, hey, listen, you can bring offers back to us. We'd love to have you back. This is where you need to be in order to stay here. If you get an offer that's above this, we will not be matching it. And so in that sense, maybe Lang already knew that he wasn't going to be back. Of course, I was bummed out. Kind of goes back to what I was saying before with regards to Hyde. It's like he's a good guy. Lang is an established leader of this locker room on a team that is perpetually very young. And so for somebody to be that established and that much of kind of a pillar of the team, he was a captain during the playoffs this past year. Round, it's a big loss from that standpoint. But when you remove the emotion of it and you take all of the off the field stuff out of the mix, and when I see the terms of the deal are basically an average of $9 to $9.5 million over 3 years, then yes, I'm okay with it. I'm not as upset about it anymore. Would I rather have TJ Lang in there than an unknown? Of course, because I know what Lang is. But do we know what Lang is going to be? Because he had the foot injury in the NFC Championship game, which I'm assuming wasn't enough for him to fail a physical for Detroit to sign him. but he did injure his foot, and he had the hip surgery, which he was able to play with, play through the hip situation. He wanted to keep himself available to the Packers, so he intentionally held off that surgery till after the season was over. And then as soon as that happened, then he had the hip surgery. So obviously he's recovering well enough that a team is passing him and is willing to bet on him. But the Packers, I think, had to – they are not a team that typically pays as a thank you for what you've done before. It's what's coming up in the future. So it was interesting because last year Josh Sitton gets cut, Lane Taylor comes up, and now we assume, okay, they're going to go all in with Lang. They're going to bring Lang back because, you know, there was kind of this debate before Sitton got cut that eventually their deals are going to come up. I don't know if the Packers can afford to keep them both, them being Sitton and Lang at guard. What are they going to do? And so then you run into kind of the situation Jacob, you and I were talking about a little bit earlier with regards to, you know, way back when Ted Thompson first came into Green Bay and you had Marco Rivera and Mike Wall, and they're both guards that have done really well for the Packers, and they really were the anchors of those offensive lines that helped get Amon Green 1,800 yards in 2003. Now here he is again, having to figure out the guard situation. And fortunately last year, Lane Taylor was able to step up and mitigate the loss of Josh Sitton. Will be interesting to see what happens this year. I agree with you 100%. If it's Don Barclay, I'm going to punch a hole in something, and it's probably going to be a wall in my home. So I hope that that is option DEFCON 0 or whatever type of Star Wars jargon that means things are going to blow up soon. You know, in case of fire break glass type of situation. But otherwise, hopefully it's not Barclay. And, yeah, I agree with you 100%. If the Packers go guard in the first round, I think it's foolish. It would go against everything that we all know. There's going to be a lot of jaws dropping, and I'm probably going to punch a second hole in the wall at that point because you might think you're being a homer. But, yeah, I think there's things like defensive back and a guy like Jabril Peppers. Yeah, absolutely. You know, those types of things, those are the kind of guys that this Packers team needs. Not saying that guard isn't important, but they've got options. And so I will miss T.J. Lang, but I think that all in all, the Packers did the right thing. They like Hyde. They walked away from a contract that was a little bit too high for their liking. And I think in the long run, they'll be fine for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best way to do it. We can, I mean, right now, it's hard to say. It's March 12th, and you just don't know what the plan is going. I mean, everybody wants to know, oh, my God, what are they going to do? And I don't know. I mean, because, you know, if you'd asked me on Thursday, what are they going to do at tight end, I'd have told you, I don't know, after Jared Cook says he's not news breaks Jared Cook's not coming back, and 2 days later, the tight ends are Lance Kendricks and Martellus Bennett. So there's a lot of things. I'm going to guess that the starting right guard is somebody who's not currently on the roster. So whether that's a draft pick or another dun-dun-dun free agent, I don't know. As far as free agents go, there's not a whole lot of options out there. It's unfortunate because, like I said, Lang's one of those guys. He played hurt, and he just gave – everything to this organization. He played guard. He played tackle. I remember one of the lasting images I'll have of T.J. Lang is him playing defensive tackle in 2010 in Jason, the Favre game you were at against the Minnesota Vikings at Lambeau Field. He actually played defensive tackle in that game because the Packers were so thin on the defensive line. So that's funny. Another thing I'll remember is last year when they drafted Jason Spriggs, he tweeted him immediately and told him his favorite kind of chewing tobacco, his favorite kind of beer, and a few other things. So I thought that was funny. He's an interesting personality. And just because he's playing for Detroit, I'll still root for him personally. And I look forward to watching him facing off against Mike Daniels. I'm not going to lie. I hope that they do a microphone on one of those two guys for NFL Network next year when those guys play against each other. That should be funny. A couple more free agents since it is Selection Sunday, I guess you could say. Jason, let's put a seed on these guys. What is the higher seed that you would select first? Eddie Lacy and Dayton Jones. For those of you guys that know, Eddie Lacy has visited the Seattle Seahawks and the Minnesota Vikings. Jason, you've made a couple jokes at Lacy's expense on that. And which guy would you bring back first? My answer, if I was seeding one, which one would I give the last number one seed to, if you will? Since the Packers have signed Nick Perry, Martellus Bennett, Lance Kendricks. That would be our three number one seeds, if you will. My fourth number one seed in this case is going to be Dayton Jones. And that's no disrespect to Eddie Lacy. It's just my opinion in general of the running back position. Pass rushers are more important, and I've read a lot of opinion from Zach Cruz. I've read a lot of stats from Bill Huber. I've read a lot of things, and I've rewatched a lot of Dayton Jones just myself and gathered that this is a guy last year he led the team in hurries and limited snaps. You want to talk about somebody that I think could give the Packers more with more snaps? This is a guy I think that can do it. Not to mention, I'm somebody with the opinion that Clay Matthews needs to play inside linebacker. So I think Dayton Jones could be a starting edge rusher for this team next season, pending draft and some other stuff as well. But my fourth one seed is Dayton Jones. Now, I think that the Packers, with this money that they're saving from T.J. Lang, obviously, there's still money to be spent here. I think they can easily bring back both. But if the option presents itself to where you're only bringing back one of those guys, always pick the pass rusher over the running back. Lacy is not a bad player by any stretch, but he's not a long-term solution at this position. I think that I've always said that Lacy's a guy who, even if he does come back next year, it's an understanding, at least to me, that this is his last year in Green Bay. Ty Montgomery is one of the running backs, and he's a long-term option there. And maybe they spend a draft pick at that position. I don't know. But your long-term solution is going to come from somewhere else. And I think that Lacy has still got a lot to offer somebody. But Dayton Jones plays a premium position, and Lacy does not. And the Packers are also a team that they're a spread offense, and they're going to throw the football. They can still do some more run things with this two tight end offense. I think that they're going to be able to run with Bennett and Kendricks. But even still, that I still is also, these are athletic tight ends. They're going to throw the football a lot. And spending anything that's more than like $3 million on a couple of running backs, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Dayton Jones is my fourth number one seed, if you will, for this option. So, Jason, Selection Sunday, fill out the rest of your bracket. Dayton Jones or Eddie Lacy?
Oh, it's Dayton Jones, and it's not even close. I mean, Eddie Lacy, to me, I did make some jokes about him. He's here in Minnesota. He's meeting with the Vikings as we speak. And I made some jokes about Manny's, because of those of you who have been to Minneapolis and know Minneapolis, there's a restaurant inside the W Hotel downtown called Manny's Steakhouse. It's a very nice spot. The Vikings love to take guys that they're trying to woo down to Manny's to talk about coming to play for the Vikings. That's where they met with Greg Jennings, and, you know, when Jennings came and signed with the Vikings. So, and I joked about their hash browns, but really and truly, if you come to Minneapolis and you get a chance, go to Manny's and get the hash browns. They are fantastic. And if there's one thing that's going to seal the deal with Eddie Lacy, we know what it might be, and that's probably some form of food. But that is where the jokes end. And I would honestly say here that I do think that Dayton, you know, and I'm getting ready to write another piece for Cheesehead TV that's going to go up tomorrow morning, and it's kind of going to talk about some of the things that the Packers have done and how they've addressed certain areas on their team. But I do think that the defense needs some attention here. And Dayton Jones is a guy who I have not heard a single thing about so far since free agency started in terms of his interest that he's getting from other teams. It doesn't mean that he's not. We're just not hearing about it. And so I do, you know, when that happens, it does lead me to believe that I think the Packers at least are going to get a chance to make an offer or match an offer if he gets one and get a chance to keep him. He'd be a great keep because – makes plays in bunches. He kind of reminds me of what Nick Perry has been up until last year, where he kind of disappears for a while. You know, I don't think he's had durability issues. He did switch himself from a defensive line on a 3-4 base to more of an outside rush type of position, the elephant end. And I think he's still learning that. So I think there's an opportunity with Dayton to bring him back. And, you know, former number one, you don't want to give up on that investment that you made, although he fulfilled his contract. So it's not like they would be losing money if he left. And, in fact, if he did leave and did sign for a decent contract somewhere else, it would actually help the Packers in terms of the compensatory next year, which we know Ted Thompson still loves. But, you know, Eddie Lacy doesn't love football to me. I think it's obvious his commitment is questionable. So Green Bay really needs to let Lacy go and just, you know, sow his oats, whatever term you want to use. Go out and try to find a better deal. They need to draw a hard line in the sand with what they will pay him. And I agree with a lot of the ideas that have been floating around out there that he should only come back on a one-year prove it. He's got a lot to prove to Green Bay. He's been good, and he's good in the offense when he's used properly. And some of that goes back to play calling and personnel usage, and I think some of it falls on the Packers in terms of what they didn't do with Lacy when he was healthy and available. But I can't help but think back to the year prior in 2015 when he got benched for missing curfew in Detroit and the weight issues that he had in the offseason last year and how he looked in that playoff game in Arizona. Those types of things make me very nervous about bringing him back. And I know that this probably sounds foolish because of the fact that this particular player is already 30 years old. But if you want a big back and Eddie Lacy isn't the answer and you can't get him to commit or if he signed somewhere else, how about another former New England Patriot and LeGarrette Blount, who's still sitting out there as a free agent? I mean, he's an older back, but I don't think the Packers are going to sit on their hands at the running back position. I think they're going to draft one this upcoming draft, and I think it's going to be sooner than later. So they'll bring a guy in who is going to potentially fill that role along with Ty Montgomery, but maybe if it's not Lacy, you bring in Blount for a year or two, and you fill that gap, and then you got your other guy that's ready to come up and take over. I mean, it wouldn't be fun to see Eddie Lacy go play for the Vikings and trample all over the Packers the one time or two times that they play each other and see a former player like that doing damage on the other side of things, because we've seen what Lacy can do when he is really good. But, again, this theme of this show, it comes down to money and value, and I just don't think Lacy offers a ton of it. So to me, it's Dayton. It's so simple. And, you know, as far as the other guys, we kind of talked about Nick Perry and how important he was. So I think he had to be a number one in terms of prioritizing the re-signing. And then from there, I think the guys that they've let go, you know, I'm fine with it. I'm okay with that. And then obviously next up is got to be Dayton, and then they've got to get the cornerback position figured out, which is going to have to come from the outside. So it's really no question. And I expect before the end of the day, you know, news broke, Jacob, I don't know if you heard, Eddie Lacy isn't following the Packers Instagram anymore, but he did, he's unfollowed the Packers on Instagram, but he did like a Vikings fan page. So to me, I don't know, you might want to play the breaking news theme sound there, but that could potentially be a little bit of a foreshadowing of what's to come. And just remember, you heard it here first on Pulse of the Pack.
Yeah, I will be sure to read into that.
I'll say this. When it comes to predictions, I've always thought that Eddie Lacy was going to be back in Green Bay. So I just got a hard time. Really, I really think people have way too much spare time when it comes to who's following who and who's doing what. And listen, I love Twitter and social media, and I've been glued to it since free agency started. I understand all that. But just people took T.J. Lang following the Seahawks on social media and ran with it, and he signed in Detroit. So, I mean, it is what it is. If he signs in Minnesota, that's great. I'm sure the Vikings overpaid for him because they're a crappy organization, and that's what crappy organizations do. Bad teams stay bad. Paying a ton of money for a running back would be exactly something the Vikings would do after releasing a old, broken-down running back that they paid a ton of money to. So that is what it is. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I think Lacy ends up back. I think Jones ends up back. And I think that the Packers are going to add one more outside piece. So whoever that may end up being, whether it's Marwin, House, somebody else, whomever, we'll see. But a lot of stuff today. We hoped it was just going to be the Martellus Bennett show, but then the Packers added some guys, subtracted some guys, all kinds of stuff. But that will do it for this edition of Pulse of the Pack. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf.
You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. Want to thank Will Ingles of Windy City Sports for coming on and talking Martellus Bennett with us today. It is the off season, but the draft is approaching soon. We're about 48 days away. It's Selection Sunday. Go ahead, and if you're listening, let me know. Who do you got winning the NCAA tournament? It's something I like doing every year, just for kicks and grins. I am personally rooting against whoever is playing Kentucky and Duke, but that is me. I don't think that the Wisconsin Badgers have a chance to really make a deep run this year. It's unfortunate they were unable to finish the job when they had Kaminsky and Decker a couple seasons ago, but such is life. But I'm getting off track here. Packers offseason, we'll be here for you guys all offseason long, talking draft, talking free agency. The Packers actually signed two guys. Holy crap. I know, it's amazing. I still can't even really believe it myself, but thank you guys for listening in. Keep it tuned in all offseason. We'll have draft stuff. Free agents, OTAs, training camp, leading all the way into opening game of the season, which will be against, we don't know yet. We'll find out next month. But thank you guys, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.